It's Jackie Wormtime Zabrowski. She's made of worms. Here to invite you to the Page 7 and Wizard and the Bruiser live show in January. We're going to be in Chicago. We're going to be in Pontiac. We're going to be in Milwaukee. So come out and visit us. You can go to lastpodcastnetwork.com/P7Live to get tickets. I think you might like it.
There's no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast on the left.
Rise from your grave.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
You know what? A lot of people said in last decade, when the last episode came out, you remember that?
Wow. Yeah, I remember that.
Last decade,
right,
when we put out the last episode, we probably should have said something about being like a gold star. You know what I mean?
Ah, yeah, with the carrots.
It seems to be that the carrots again, Kissel. Even you are more stuck on the CFs more than anything. Where it seems to be that's actually surprisingly kind of normal.
Really?
People put vegetables in their pussies and their assholes every day.
Yeah. I guess every day, definitely.
Well, you got to put them in the freezer first.
But the part that's the really scary stuff is the stuff that we're going to especially get into this episode. So I would maybe say this is a gold star territory episode. We're going to get deep into it. And I think that it's very appropriate for the first episode of the Roaring Twenties.
All right. Hey, everyone. How you doing? This is the last podcast on the left. I am Ben, staring at Marcus Parks.
Always staring.
Always looking. And then we have Henry Zabrowski in Los Angeles.
Feeling tighter than ever?
Yep.
And by tighter, I mean hammered.
Absolutely.
I almost did it because in the studio refrigerator, we have White Claws.
Uh-huh.
Like, we have a little stash of White Claws. Jackie keeps them. I've been known to indulge in AWC here and there.
Claw is the law. I know that.
Sometimes it's fun to pop one in and then just kind of see if it affects your driving.
Well, it does. It's alcohol. But you know, this podcast has really ruined your brain, Marcus.
I mean, what do you mean?
Because over the holiday season, I gave a nice amount of money to a man in need, a homeless man.
Oh, Ben Kissel, such a good man.
Good man.
Has to let everybody know that he's been a good man.
No, no, no. I didn't say how much I gave him.
Altruistic. Philanthropist.
You told us how much you gave him.
Yes, because I needed someone to be grateful for me. That's why I did it.
Christ.
I invested in him to say, thank you, sir. You've just made my dreams come true. And I said, ha ha, yeah, I did.
Jesus Christ.
Marcus,
what are you, Ed Buck?
But then Marcus says, after I did something very nice to someone, he said, oh, yeah, that's how Bob Burdella started. It's just a matter of time before you put a carrot in his ass.
I did.
And I am just going to say this, Mr. Parks. You can be good without expecting that at some point you're going to put a vegetable in a person's butthole.
You are truncating and taking my comments out of context.
This is ad hominem. Is that? Is it?
No, it's
but
not.
But I'm saying that you can. I mean, it just depends if you gave him the money and then say, all right, now gape it.
I did. This is the text was, I said, I just gave a homeless man $100 and his gratefulness filled my entire void left in my heart.
Uh-huh.
And then you said, also helping other less fortunate strangers is how Bob Burdella got started. And then I said, yeah, but I didn't put a carrot in his ass. And then you said, yet.
Yeah, you were the one that brought up the carrot in the ass, not me.
You did. Wow, you are literally, your whole argument's falling apart.
Okay.
Guys.
Welcome to 2020. All right, Bob Burdella part two.
So when we last left Bob Burdella, he just committed his third murder in less than a year, and his techniques of torture were getting progressively more brutal, as is evidenced by both Burdella's notes and the hundreds of Polaroids found in his home. Now, when cops started going through Burdella's things after his arrest, they thought they'd found an audio tape of Burdella torturing one of his victims. Oof. And it seemed like a pretty good bet that that's what they had. The tape appeared to be of movement back and forth on a bed, along with someone screaming threats like, I'm gonna kill you, motherfucker, I'll kill you, I'll fucking kill you.
I'll fucking kill you, I'll kill you, motherfucker, you motherfucker, I got you now, I got you.
And so on and so forth. And to the cops, this sounded exactly like something a torture killer would say during a murder.
Okay.
But when Burdella was confronted with the tape, he told investigators that this was actually a tape of Philip Bukovic masturbating on the third floor because roommate Phil liked to yell at his dick while he jerked off.
Whoa!
This is one of my favorite details I've heard about. Number one, way to throw your roommate under the bus.
No, no kidding.
That your roommate. This is, I mean, then it's like, obviously this whole time, Bob has been the more difficult roommate. Phillip's trying to just get through his shit, you know? Like, maybe his he got mad because, like, you know, his Postmates guy yelled at him. You know, he's got to deal with stuff. But right now, Phillip's kind of tipping the scales.
That's really interesting indeed. I do think there's a masturbation rule when it comes to roommates.
Yeah.
You got to turn the other cheek. You got to look away.
But this tape was made because Bob had set up a secret microphone in the air duct that was going into Phil's room. So he was recording it secretly, but Phil was also screaming at his dick for at least 10 minutes every time he jerked off.
Got what? You, motherfucker! Got you, motherfucker! You're right here. You're my prisoner. Yeah, yeah. No, don't. Yeah, I can mess with the top. Ooh, you bitch. I'm calling you my little bitch.
But at the same time, for me, if I was masturbating, I like saying more encouraging things. You know, like, you got it, buddy.
Yeah, look sure. How big and grand you are.
Well, I don't...
Just like father made. Just like father wanted to make with all the seed down crammed in his police balls.
I don't talk to my dick. It doesn't have ears. There's no point.
You ever try to glue little ears to it?
No, it's not like, it's not baby Shrek.
Can you imagine?
All right.
Just imagine.
Can we please get on to something less disgusting, which is Bob Berdella?
Well, the thing was, after listening to the tape a little more closely, the cops decided that on this point, Berdella was actually telling the truth. It really yeah. was a secretly recorded tape of a guy named Phil jerking off while screaming threats at his own penis.
We would be here until 2022 if we tried to psychologically unpack what the hell that means.
Somebody having fun. Two consenting adults. You're a consenting adult with yourself who is another consenting adult, and you can abuse your penis as much as you want.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, Bob Berdella's neighbors didn't know about any of the weird shit that was going on in the house because Bob's neighborhood was the one place where he actually had a fairly good reputation.
Hmm.
He was known to be a bit sullen at times, but for the most part, Bob on Charlotte Street was nice enough, if just a little bit odd. All that changed once the killing began.
Ah, that'll do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Suddenly, the Bob who would smile and wave could barely make eye contact. It seemed like the only thing on Berdella's mind was murder. And on, and on September 26th, 1985, he did it again. This time, he killed a guy named James Ferris. Now, Ferris was a running buddy of a guy named George Shaw.
Hmm.
And these two dudes had previously dealt with Berdella in buying a bottle of animal tranquilizer for $35. But after they tried shooting it up and found it was no good, they went back and traded it for a little weed.
Is this that common of a drug that people were using in the 80s, animal tranq?
Yes, because it's easier to get than human tranq. Like, a lot of the times you could go, like, vets, they're good with animals, but I think a lot of times they have a pretty low price. Now, I'm not saying that I'm not going to attack all the vet listeners that we have
no,
on the show.
We love them.
But I'm certain if somebody offered you some money, you could give them some ketamine a little bit, because what are you going to do? Unless, I mean, I'm not saying, yeah, you know, it just depends on the vet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, ketamine's horse tranquilizer, right?
Ketamine is, I guess... It's something that makes you feel sleepy deepy down in your toesy woesies.
Mm. I don't know. Either way, I say don't do it.
Don't.
Good work. It really puts a pause, P-A-W-S, on your life.
Well, after that, these guys were in and out of Bob's place for weeks, showing up drunk and wanting to stay over. See, Ferris and Shaw were drifters, especially Ferris, whose wife had just kicked him out of the house after he sold all their furniture for drug money.
Ah.
It's a hard conversation. It's a hard yeah. conversation to have. I don't know how many times Natalie comes home, the whole dining room table's missing, and I'm just sitting there. I was like, I had to get Advil.
Right.
It's difficult in 2020.
I believe it.
And Ferris had pissed off Bob by trying to involve him in a drug sting in order to get Shaw out of a hash wrap in Independence, Missouri.
This is a Kansas City situation.
Yeah, dude, have you ever been in a hash wrap in Indy, Mozo?
Oh, yeah, man.
It's all fucking hard out there, bro.
The final straw, though, came when Bob deemed Ferris to be, in his estimation, annoying.
Bob said he was annoying.
Bob said Ferris was annoying.
He has got me up in a tizzy. Because my whole thing is, watch whatever you want on your TV, but wear headphones.
This is like the pot calling the ketamine black. It's ridiculous.
So, when James Ferris showed up at Bob's place again, looking for a place to stay in late September, Bob crushed up a bunch of Valium and dropped them into his homemade chili and started the process anew.
When you say homemade chili, I think liquid shit.
Homemade chili.
I will never, if you ever give me anything that is homemade chili, I am never eating it.
I make a pretty thick chili, and I do like it in both styles. You know what I mean? Brown and red.
It sounds, again, liquid shit.
No, man, no. I'm fine with homemade chili. It's more like grandpa's chili. Uncle Bud's chili.
Well, that could be kind of fun.
Besides the now routine actions of sodomizing his victim with vegetables and various other objects, Berdella began experimenting even more with electricity, using a spatula hooked up to a 7,700-volt transformer to shock Ferris's buttocks, shoulders, and testicles. Ugh. Each shock would last between 2 and 5 minutes.
Jeez!
And this continued, along with various sodomies, from 9 p.m., until 10:45 the next morning.
Oh, my God.
And that's when Bob had to be off to the flea market.
He never missed work, though.
No,
he didn't. And I'm naming my first poetry collection Various Sodomies, which I hope people enjoy. It's about every sodomy for a day of the week.
Oh, isn't that nice?
Oh, like an advent calendar.
It is just like an advent calendar that makes some people come and makes some people go bleh, which is my big tagline.
Yep, there it is.
So when Bob returned that afternoon, Ferris was running a high temperature. So Bob injected him with penicillin to keep him alive, wrote down the injection amount and time in his notes, and resumed the torture.
Mm. This was just not good. None of this is going to plan. And I didn't even have a plan. I should have had a plan.
Mercifully, though, like with Bob's previous victim, the amount of tranquilizers needed to keep Ferris prostrate made sure he didn't last another night, and he died presumably of an overdose just hours into the second day. Now, it's at this point you might be asking yourself, how the fuck Berdella is getting away with four people in his general vicinity suddenly going missing without anyone noticing?
Yeah,
especially since two of these men had at the very least slight beefs with Berdella.
Right.
After the disappearance of James Ferris, the cops did indeed start looking into the life of Bob Berdella, because this investigation shared more than a few similarities with the disappearance of Bob's first victim, Jerry Howell. What the police found was story after story of Bob Berdella injecting young men with drugs and having sex with them afterward. And there were also rumors that Bob liked to chain up young men in his basement and torture them. There was also the testimony of Gene Shaw, who was a running buddy of James Ferris.
Mm-hmm.
He led investigators to Berdella's home after Ferris disappeared. But predictably, all the cops heard and saw was an icky homosexual party house. And the investigation stalled.
Well, Sergeant, I have a theory. Phillip's dick did it.
Oh, yeah. Tell me, have you seen Icky Homosexual Party House 2? It's the way they kind of continue the canon of Icky Homosexual Party House 1 is pretty impressive. And it's incredible to bring back old characters, some of your favorites. And there's some new characters in there.
They're
like
really
Gamja, the guy that's the human cum bucket at the very bottom of the pile. He was so cute and so fun.
Yeah, well, it's amazing they were able to raise all that money for the orphanage, though, wasn't it?
It really was that they did save the orphanage. And then all those boys died anyway.
Yep.
Well, that's what happened a lot in the 80s. You know, when cops would try investigate. I mean, it happened with John Wayne Gacy. It happened with Jeffrey Dahmer. Mm-hmm. Like, the cops would go, they would start investigating a crime that was involving gay men, and they would just go, I'm good, I'm going home. I don't want to deal with this.
I don't want to get gay. I don't know.
I think it speaks to their own inner weird desires, right?
Yeah.
They have this idea that gay dudes do stuff so much more cryptic and dark and fucked up than that you could possibly imagine. They reflect it. They're like, well, that's a house of homosexuals. All they do is spread assholes in there. All they do is try to figure out how many pieces of furniture they can have sex with. But you're like, no, you're saying that that's kind of what you're saying about yourself and what you view. You kind of hope happens in that house.
Yeah.
Because one day you wish that you just had the confidence to wear a sheer shirt and go into that house and experience all the human car wash that you think that's going on there. For the most part, people are very boring.
Yeah.
Dude, if you ever read, like, Focus on the Family, pamphlets that my parents used to always get, mm-hmm. or 700 Club, they love talking about gay sex.
They really
do. They go into great detail, fantasies.
They love it. It was like that guy that we talk about all the time, the eat the poo poo guy. Where he's like obsessed with the idea that the gay dudes poop into each other's mouths and they eat the poo poo like the ice cream. And he talks about how they eat the. Or it's being like, man, you thought that up. Most homosexual men and women, they're at Home Depot looking at faucets and shit. It's incredibly bone-shatteringly boring.
Yep.
What they're doing.
Well, it's the exact same thing we're doing. There's no difference.
Yeah. No, I eat the poo-poo. You don't eat the poo-poo? You guys aren't doing that. You haven't found love.
It's true. It's true. Natalie won't let me eat the poo-poo because she said it's a 5-year anniversary thing.
Oh, that's nice.
Now, admittedly, the cops did put a surveillance team on Bob, and investigators were given a standing order to, quote, fuck with Bob Berdella whenever possible, but no real investigation was ever done during this time.
What do they mean, fuck with Bob Berdella? What does that even mean in police terms? Throw eggs at him when you see him on the street? What does that
mean?
Dude,
it's easy to do. You go and you see if his car is parked too far away from the curb.
Yeah.
You go and see if he's got foot, like, you check his whole house for regulation problems. There's so many ways a cop can ruin your life if they choose to.
You know for a fact one officer was like, I'll go undercover. And he got way into blowing guys in the bathroom and stuff.
You dyed your hair and you shaved your chest? Yeah. I'm deep undercover.
Well, as a result of this investigation, Bob, at the very least, slowed down on his killing.
Mm.
Now, one of the people in the James Ellroy documentary speculated that Bob never slowed down because conventional knowledge tells us that serial killers usually take victims with more regularity the longer they're active.
And
it's true in a lot of cases. It's true in most cases. But there are exceptions. Mm-hmm. I mean, it happened with Andrei Chikatilo in Russia, and it happened with Bob Berdella. Namely, when an investigation gets too close, the killers take a break. Because they know if they keep killing, they're going to get caught.
Mm-hmm. But not to be too simplistic and disgusting about this, there are some serial killers that are more quality over quantity when it comes to their experience and what they're trying to get out of it.
Yeah.
Look at somebody like the dickhead BTK. They view each one of their crimes as a art piece to themselves, like to this thing. And each one is very important and takes a huge amount of thought and energy for them to put this thing together. And they view them as these giant epic stories. Mm-hmm. Bob Berdella kind of viewed this the same way, where he viewed each one of these men as like a love story, like in a way, in a really fucked up way.
What about something like the Golden State Killer? Who just stopped.
BTK did the same thing.
Yeah, BTK also just stopped.
But BTK was horny for the attention. He still needed it. Golden State Killer was just like, hope none of my aunts or nephews go over and do a DNA test.
Well, they said the same thing on Michael Jackson when he stopped licking buttholes by the time he hit 50, is that his libido kind of dropped. That it does get to a point where you're not as ridiculously horny. And it's like, well, as a comedian, I'm ridiculously horny, but I don't have to get it satisfied in terrible ways.
Interesting.
Sometimes I can have a nice hamburger and I'll shoot a little bit, and that's nice. I get some of the devils out. But what you hope is that eventually the system slows down and you don't want to do it as much so you can get some of that mental energy back.
If you could just see our faces staring at Henry as he just sort of associated himself with Michael Jackson in a very bizarre way.
Yeah.
And then also
as a comedian,
As a comedian, which really doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense at all.
And then the way that you refer to your sperm as the devils is a very interesting.
They're little devils, and if they get built up, they make you do bad things. They gotta come out.
Are you Phil? Phil? Phil?
Yeah, you motherfucker. Yeah, you're my little prisoner. You're attached to my pubes, you little dumb little pink little... Oh, I wish you were bigger. Be bigger!
Well, usually this break period that serial killers oftentimes take, it's what sinks the only defense most serial killers have, the insanity defense. Because they claim that they can't help themselves, that this is something inside them that's broken. They claim that they're schizophrenic. They claim they're borderline. They claim they're whatever. But the breaks tells both us and the jury that they can stop. They can always stop. They just don't fucking want to.
Yep.
So, on June 17th, 1986, about 9 months after James Ferris was killed, Bob Berdella decided to kill again.
Ooh.
This one's name was Todd Stoops. Stoops and his wife had stayed at Berdella's place in the past, but had moved out. And Stoops had moved on to high-risk sex work on the street. And just by chance, Berdella ran into Todd Stoops at Liberty Memorial Park and decided then and there that Stoops was going to be his next victim. So Berdella invited him back to his place for lunch and crushed up some tranquilizers in a peanut butter sandwich.
Now, see, I'm a crunchy peanut butter guy, and this is a solid, like, attack on crunchy peanut butter.
I agree.
Which I understand. I understand some people don't like it. They don't like the texture. But this is, that's very scary to think that someone can just put a bunch of crushed up pills and peanut butter and you wouldn't even know.
I love crunchy peanut butter.
I do too.
Okay.
Wow.
Consensus.
Wow.
Cool. That's the first time, I think. Three branches of government to work as well.
Wow, if we could only get this spirit up to Washington, D.C., they can cross the aisle.
Well, Stoops soon passed out and would spend 2 agonizing weeks with Bob Berdella.
2 weeks?
2 weeks.
Damn.
Now, one of the things that Bob had noticed during the murder of James Ferris was that Ferris had a raspy voice. As a result, it was hard for him to scream loudly, which meant Ferris didn't need a gag. And since Berdella's victims kept dying from choking on vomit blocked by those gags, Berdella came up with a new solution.
Just put on my thinking cap for a second. Another amateur scientist has cracked the case.
To keep Todd Stoops from screaming, Berdella injected Drano into Stoops' neck to disable his voice box. After that, Berdella engaged in torture sessions with Stoops that would last up to 17 hours. Nonstop.
And I kind of see him, because you know what I was listening to recently was Judas Priest, and like Bob Berdella seems to me like a priest, like character, like just him like listening to Turbo Lover, like as you're trying to sleep, and him like humping the air with a Kiss the Cook apron on, man, that's got to be a lot.
Bob Berdella liked synthesizer music, but we'll get into that later.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Aww. Is that a bad response?
Well, Stoops suffered from possibly the most painful death of all. Pretty soon after Berdella captured Stoops, Bob fisted him and ruptured the internal wall of Stoops' anus. An infection set in, and Stoops finally died after 2 weeks of fevers, belt whips, electric shocks, and continued sodomy.
Jeez.
Oh, God.
Hey, can I ask a question? Because you actually did, you had a little bit more experience in the idea of like people that did more extreme sexual behavior from back in the day.
Right.
How does one train your butt to take the bigger objects?
I don't think he was training it.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying in this case.
Oh, you're asking me?
Yes, I'm asking you.
I don't fucking know.
I don't know. You went to the Fleshbot Awards.
Yeah, we went to the Fleshbot Awards.
I gave the award
once
to China.
Yeah, but I thought that maybe you kind of heard it or read it in a book somewhere. I looked you, dog meat.
You were so sheltered sexually.
I'm just a sweet boy. I'm just saying, I don't know how. I guess you just slowly work it up.
Yeah, yeah, you can't go all
you
in.
You can do the crank.
Yeah.
You can crank.
Yeah, but you can't. Yeah, you can't go. I mean, Bob, he, of course, and he did it wrong, and he also,
yeah,
I mean, and he did it in order to hurt him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yes, I mean, of course. I'm just saying, I guess you just have to do it slowly.
You know, for your homework this year, for the year, go to Pornhub and search anal acrobats.
Oh, is this work? Is this research?
This is research.
Yeah.
Can I buy a Pornhub premium on the company card?
Not on the company card, but you can use it as a tax write-off.
Wow.
I would have given it to you. But Papa has spoken. Sorry, not on the company card.
Well, Stoops's body was dismembered in the bathtub over the course of 2 nights.
Oh.
Because Bob had to keep leaving to go to work and run errands.
So no roommate?
No roommate.
Phil wasn't there?
Okay. No roommate. Yeah, he never murdered when he had a roommate.
Okay.
It was only when he was alone in the house. And the butchered remains were stored in the basement until the garbage truck came on Monday morning.
Jeez.
Meanwhile, things were just getting fucking weirder over at Bob's Bazaar Bazaar. That's Bob's flea market store.
Of course.
This is what Bob had inscribed on his business cards.
The Dragon Nagari. I rise from death. I kill death and death kills me. I resuscitate the bodies I have created and, alive in death, I destroy myself. Although I carry poison in my head, the antidote can be found in my tail, which I bite with rage. Whoever bites me must first bite himself. Otherwise, if I bite him, death will bite him first in the head. Biting is a remedy against bites.
I'm just kind of looking for his fish skeleton. We're doing a high school performance of a
fish
really,
skeleton.
Like, Moby
get
Dick.
Out of my hair. Get out of my hair, you fucking amateur, until you're ready to see some cocks. You get out of my store.
Okay.
Now, it was shit like this that caused police to later think that Bob Berdella was probably into some satanic shit.
Nah.
And this was only reinforced when they found a record on Bob's turntable by Mort Garson. And Mort Garson's fucking great.
All right.
He's fantastic. Okay.
I knew that he knew. I knew that Marcus knew who he was and had a catalog of his stuff. You can tell because it's synth.
I'm just saying there was a reissue of his album Plantasia that was put out earlier this year, and it's fucking fantastic.
It's the most synth name for an album ever.
It's music for plants, and it's fantastic.
Okay, wait a second. It's music for plants?
Yeah, Plantasia.
Great. Great. Honestly, sure. Good.
Highly recommended. It's very good.
It's better than binding and torturing 6 men in an attic and killing them systematically, you know?
Well, the record that Bob Berdella had was called Black Mass for Lucifer. And Black Mass for Lucifer is actually a super cool Moog album released in 1974. Let's listen to an example of Bob Berdella's music taste.
Hold on, let me get my plant so it can really enjoy it.
Oh, he just pulled his pubic hairs out of his line. Oh, man.
Fuck yeah, man.
Fucking. Yeah, man, this is fucking the best Black Mass Lucifer fucking cut I've seen in a while, man.
Fucking Mort's on a different level on this one, bro. You can hear the throne room in this one.
What do you think, Ben?
I think it's devastatingly horrible. I really find this to be so nerve, like, just damaging. I feel dumber somehow.
Dumber?
I just don't feel like this is not... Also, if I'm a plant, I'm stuck in the soil.
Well, no,
I'm just
this
chilling.
Isn't the music for plants. This is Black Mass for Lucifer. Do you want to hear Plantasia?
Sure. What's a Plantasia song?
All right. I'll put on Plantasia.
Okay.
It is a delight.
This I like better.
Yeah. I actually do like this. I actually like the other one.
No, I love the other one.
I could definitely see myself fucking out of my mind on edibles in a garden. Just talking to plants, being like,
this one I actually understand. I could also see licking a bloody knife and like looking into the mirror and being like, who am I? I get that. But the first one sounds like the Netherworld in Phantasm. It sounds like their favorite song.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I picked a particularly intense moment from that album to play.
Okay.
But yeah, this is Mort Garson. Go check him out, everybody.
This is very nice. Yeah. I actually like that. Maybe I'm a plant after all.
Oh, when it came. Oh, did you hear this part where it got very. Oh, like Dooney. Ooh, this is good.
I know.
Ooh.
This is good. I like it. It's amazing how one person can create both great music and then just making my eyes bleed sounds.
What's funny about sounds.
Yeah. The whole album's fantastic, so yeah, go check out Plantasia by Mort Garson.
How come plants get better music than we do? We got to deal with Creed and Third Eye Blind.
those are distinctly music for humans.
Well, in addition to Black Mass for Lucifer, cops also found around 20 books on Satanism and witchcraft. Now, the cops were already all keyed up when it came to satanic crimes, because in early 1988, a kid had been killed in Carl Junction, Missouri, in a kinda sorta satanic ritual.
Bleh.
In that story, three teenage edgelords had beaten a fourth to death with baseball bats. They then tied the body to a 200-pound rock and dumped it in a well during a half-ass admitted satanic sacrifice.
Okay.
Not a single fucking dagger? You're gonna call it a fucking half-ass admitted satanic sacrifice, you little twerps, and not have a single dagger involved or incense?
Yep, you're gonna need a dagger.
That's why it was half-ass. They just beat beat this kid to death with baseball bats.
Okay.
As such, people were taking all this Satan stuff seriously when it came to Bob Berdella. One of the investigators even wore a ring adorned with upward curled ram's horns to protect himself against Berdella's black magic powers.
That's cute.
It is cute to even think that it's nice, but technically that is pure Aries energy.
Mm-hmm. But according to Bob, all of this stuff was just a nihil interest, and he never imagined he would ever be labeled a Satanist. Mm. But even so, regular folk around Kansas City started saying they'd seen Bob at satanic rituals, holding court. Here's what one woman said she witnessed, as told to Geraldo in his Satanism expose.
This woman claims she met Berdella through her former husband, a high priest in a local satanic cult.
We were at a meeting in the area, and he was up on the platform in a throne, which symbolizes that sacrifice at that particular meeting was for him, was done for him.
So he was in an exalted position. He was a VIP.
Yes, he was.
What happened there at that ceremony?
There was a young man killed, a young boy. He was 16 years old.
Did you ever tell the police about any of this?
No, I didn't.
Why?
People don't believe you when you talk about these things. People just do not believe these things happen.
Well, lucky for you, ma'am, I'm Geraldo, and I will believe a whole bunch of horse shit if it helps my ratings.
Honestly, he fucking wishes. He wishes that all of that was real.
Yeah.
He was a curiosity collector. What do you think they'll do when they cart all my belongings away after my reckoning has already begun? You know what I mean? They're going to say all of this crazy shit about, you know, oh, he had all this whole series of things to help learn how to gape his butthole. And, oh, he fucking had a collection of whips. Like, I'm not a normal citizen. I'm a normal citizen of America.
Yeah, I think they're actually, it's going to be very underwhelming for you. It'll just be like, oh, this guy was a nerd, huh? Look
at that. Bob Berdella did not need any help in inflating his body count, even though he did keep his murders to about one every summer after the close call with James Ferris. Mm. Never did it in the wintertime. It was always either a spring or summer thing. His next victim, killed in June of 1987, was Larry Pearson. Pearson was a 20-year-old out on probation for the aggravated robbery of a Domino's delivery driver.
Oh, don't do that.
I'm going to say this. You never have to rob a You don't have to rob a Domino's delivery driver. You just give him money and he'll give you whatever pizza. He doesn't care who it belongs to.
No.
I'm not saying I guess that's me saying that he's robbing them for pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was robbing them for money if he just took the pizza.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's my first thought is that he was stealing the pizza like he's Michelangelo from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And Pearson had just been arrested again for standing on the side of the road and exposing himself to passing cars.
You got cock, you got cock, you got some balls, you got cock, you got cock. See him standing up there spinning a sign. It's fun.
And of course, who was there to help with these legal troubles but Bob Berdella?
Hmm.
Pearson had met Berdella at Bob's Bazaar Bizarre in the spring of 1987, and Pearson connected with Bob over a shared interest in wizards and witchcraft.
Oh.
Well, eventually, Pearson moved in with Berdella, but after Pearson spent 2 weeks just lazing around the house, Berdella again got annoyed.
Hmm.
And when Pearson started bragging about rolling gay men, Berdella decided to kill him.
One day in early August, Pearson complained that he wasn't feeling well, so Berdella gave him tranquilizers that he said were antibiotics, and immediately afterward challenged Pearson to a shots contest with vodka and peppermint schnapps.
It's a shot contest!
Shot contest!
Damn!
Who can throw up first? Can you imagine shooting peppermint schnapps?
Yeah, that's a shooter.
No!
That's high school.
Yeah.
High school shit.
The guy is a 20-year-old dick flasher. This might as well be in high school.
You don't think he doesn't deserve a little pomp and circumstance? He doesn't deserve the good booze?
No, I don't think he actually does, even though, and I love, I'm not victim.
You're classist.
I'm not. I'm just saying, this is probably fine for him.
Well, I think Berdella was not a big drinker. I think what Berdella was doing was he was doing the whole shot over the shoulder thing.
Oh, this one's strong, and like pours it like an inch from his lip, going, oh, wow, you got me.
So by 6:30 p.m., Pearson was passed out, and Berdella injected him with four further shots of
chlorpromazine.
Oh, yeah, I'm just getting this stuff.
I'm looking at chlorpromazine.
Cuyahoga Falls.
I have trouble with medicinal names.
No, they don't make any sense. That's the whole point.
Well, he injected him with four shots of that shit to make sure that he stayed passed out. Mm. But since Pearson was a bigger guy, Berdella didn't feel like taking him up the stairs. So instead, he drug him down the stairs to the basement.
Okay.
By 8 o'clock, Pearson's hands were linked to a chain wrapped around a brick column, and Berdella was injecting Drano into his neck.
So he's following up with the Drano routine.
Huh? It worked once.
Okay.
And Berdella hooked him up to the transformer and shocked him awake.
So scary.
God.
This time, Berdella brought a mattress down to the basement for his own comfort. And in between the sodomies and the penicillin injections, Berdella used an iron bar to break the bones in Pearson's hands.
Ooh. There's something about this that, like, fucks with me almost more than anything else, of just, like, just breaking a man's hands.
Yeah.
It reminds me of Unit 731,
mm-hmm.
that video where they would put the, they would dip them in ice water, put them outside in, like, 5-degree weather, let it freeze, and then shatter their hands.
Well, that was a movie.
I know.
It's a movie.
That was a movie.
But they tried. Although they did try to do it.
They did absolutely do it. But the bit. But what you're talking. What you saw was.
No, Marcus. Oh, you tell me that Ken Burns wasn't there filming everything that Unit 731 did.
But wait a second. So Luke Skywalker isn't real?
I thought
Luke Skywalker.
Luke
Skywalker's not gonna be president.
No, unfortunately, he turns. No, wait. Does he turn to the dark side? I have no idea. I don't even care.
Well, while Berdella was breaking Pearson's hands, he would taunt him concerning his interest in wizards and witchcraft, saying that while the wizards were all fantasy, this was reality, and he was going to have to deal with this as reality.
Wizards are stupid, and elves are too skinny to be fun, and dwarves are ugly, and that's what you get. And now your hands are gone.
What in the hell is going on?
Where's your wizard now to save me? Oh, Gandalf, he's supposed to arrive on time, all the time, huh? Oh, it appears Gandalf is late.
Gandalf is never late. The wizard always arrives on time. I say that on a regular basis.
I know you say that on a regular basis. It does nothing to alleviate the anger.
No, I know. It's important to keep you mildly angry, though. It keeps you alive. Like my grandmother.
So, after going to work at the flea market and coming back, Berdella shaved Pearson's hair because it kept getting tangled up in all the bindings.
Oh, my God.
This, along with the torture and malnutrition, gave Pearson the appearance of a concentration camp victim. That's what he looked like in all the Polaroids that Berdella took about week one.
So he's taking pictures the whole damn time.
Whole time, yeah.
They have a fairly extensive, horrible collection of them on the, I believe, the Murderpedia.
Yes.
Site for Bob Berdella.
They're fucking awful.
Yeah, I would believe that, yeah.
But in contrast to the others, Pearson decided to go full submissive with Bob Berdella. During one anal rape, Pearson said he was going to die. Not because he was actually dying, but because that's what he thought Berdella wanted. He was trying to please Bob Berdella in order to survive. And he was right. The next day, Berdella gave him solid food for the first time, eggs and sausage. And since Berdella now trusted him, he allowed Pearson to give him oral sex, while Ollie North testified in the Iran-Contra hearings in the background.
And I tell you what, this government corruption has to stop. It has to stop. I could keep blowing me. This is just absolutely incredible. How are those eggs and sausages? Do you remember those? Do you remember how you love me? Do you love me? I got to change this channel. Ooh, Wheel is on. This is, oh, Encyclopedia. Encyclopedia. That's the encyclopedia.
I mean, it's never just one word usually. It would be like Encyclopedia Britannica or something like that. But Oliver North was a scapegoat. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say about Ollie North.
Is that your hot
That's your fucking Fox News hot take?
No, this is my Ben Kissel who appears on Fox News hot take.
And because Bob, quote unquote, liked Pearson, Pearson got moved from the basement to the bedroom, and Bob led him upstairs with a dog collar and leash. And every time Berdella left the house, Pearson's arms and legs were tethered to the bedposts. Mm. Cops said when they found that bed, every single one of the bedposts were rubbed raw from guys trying to struggle against their ropes.
Damn.
And it had smoothed all the bedposts down.
And they left them all up there, too. Like, he left the ties as he went. It's, again... The hoarder mentality that he has, it's about capturing memory. And that's why he allowed himself to go so long in between kills, because he would be fully ensconced in the erotic memory of it all the time.
Mm. And for the next week or so, the two of them settled into like a routine with no torture at all. Here's how Berdella described it.
I'd wake up in the morning, have sex with him, prepare breakfast for the both of us, feed him, tie him down while I went to work or ran my errands, and I might have ran. I got him back from work, came up and tied him, gave him a couple cigarettes to smoke. Then I would usually just go up and spend the rest of the evening with him, unless I had some meetings or errands that I had to run. He would be very cooperative. He'd allow me to tie him back down. Just chilling, maxing, relaxing, all cool. All the kids are just shooting some b-ball outside of the school, just enjoying themselves.
Damn.
All in all, Pearson's terrifying ordeal with Bob Berdella lasted 6 weeks.
Jeez.
It all came to an end on August 5th when Pearson decided he'd had enough.
Mm-hmm.
During another session of oral sex, Pearson bit down hard and damn near ripped the head off Berdella's penis.
From all that sausage training. That's great. Bite that dick off.
And apparently it almost completely severed the head of his cock.
It was hanging on by like a piece of skin.
Nothing but trouble.
It might as well have been bitten off completely.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Good for him.
And Berdella just sat there, like, screaming at him, like, but he wasn't screaming, like, what? He was like, this is not the way to handle this. This is not the way. He was fussy about it. He was fussy about getting his fucking penis getting bitten off.
We had an arrangement.
Yeah.
We had an arrangement. We were supposed to watch Tears of Endearment tonight.
Terms of Endearment.
Terms.
But after Berdella kind of got over it a little bit, he beat Pearson with a stick until he was unconscious. Then Berdella went to the hospital and filed a police report that a man named Larry Pearson had bitten his penis during oral sex.
Very clever.
But
very real name. Yep.
Yeah. But Berdella was declining to prosecute.
He's like, what a hero.
This is the man that did it, but I'm not going to prosecute. Bob spent 2 days at the hospital while Larry was just tied up in the bed back at his house, presumably in and out of consciousness from the blows to the skull. Because when Bob came back 2 days later, Pearson was alive, but unconscious. Mm. And Bob told them at the hospital, he's like, hey, I got to go let the dogs out. I'll be back. So he went home, put a plastic bag over Pearson's head, and suffocated him to death. And that was the end of Pearson.
Yep. But they said, one of the doctors said that with the surgery, with the reattachment of the head of the penis back to the penis, is actually, they think that from now on, he had no feeling.
None.
In any of that. So it's weird. So anything that happens after this, he's not even getting any physical pleasure necessarily out of it.
Interesting.
Bob then went back to the hospital for a couple more days, came home wearing a catheter, and dragged Pearson's body down to the basement. But because Berdella was so weak from almost losing his dick, it took a while.
Yeah.
He did things in small stages. opening up the stomach with a razor and taking out the innards in one trip, and cutting off the limbs in the next. And since he was weak, he relied on the chainsaw a little more than usual, which made things a lot messier.
God. Can you imagine that, too? You got a fucking catheter attached to you. You're trying to drag this fucking body around. You got the chainsaw just shaking your whole body as you're doing it, and the whole time you're just thinking, this would be a lot easier if I still had a dick.
Good Lord.
But instead of putting the whole body out with the garbage, Berdella kept the head and again put it in the freezer for about a week. And after a week passed, he went out to his backyard, dug up the skull he'd buried a couple of years before, and replaced it with Pearson's skull. Then, with the completely decomposed skull of Robert Sheldon in hand, I think his second or third victim, Berdella removed all the teeth with pliers, save for one back left molar, and stored the teeth in two envelopes, one for upper, one for lower. And the thing was, there were still people coming in and out of Berdella's house in this time period, living with him. Not during the murder itself, but before and after. One guy named Hamp Reichler said he did odd jobs for Bob until Hamp refused sex and Bob stopped paying. Another named DJ Blankenship actually had a consensual sexual relationship with Bob Berdella in 1988, but moved out in February after Berdella surreptitiously injected him with drugs.
Because he didn't want a partner. He had this kind of fantasy. You remember what we talked about in the last episode, said he was obsessed with the book The Collector. That's what he said was his inspiration. And the idea, I think, on some level, is that he loved total control. And he, in a way, he wanted it the hard way. He wanted love the hard way. He wanted you to love him despite how much torture he's putting you through, because he believed he's so incredible and he's such a unique and special human being, and that your relationship is so special and one of its kind, that you would love him even though he's electrocuting you, because he's teaching you, he's showing you what it's like to accept his love.
He looks like an offensive lineman from the movie Unnecessary Roughness. Where does he even get it from?
He's like if God was a person.
Oh,
yes.
Weird.
Love me even though your life is terrible.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, 6 months after DJ left, Bob Berdella would attempt to take his last victim. It was March of 1988, and Kansas City, this is for you, Ben. They were hosting the NCAA basketball tournament. Woo. It was March Madness time, baby.
March Madness! I'm excited. We have to go to Las Vegas for March Madness this year, guys.
Sure, if Texas Tech is in it again, I might.
I'll fly with you. I'll drug you and take you.
Marcus, don't you want to see what it's like once they have no control?
It's
a good experiment.
I can't. You can't do that after 35.
Take Molly and go to Coachella after 35. But you can definitely gamble on young stud athletes doing things that you could never do even when you were their age, and then you can also scream, "I would have made that shot," and then you can do a whole bunch of things.
That's, I can do that. I'm not going to go to Vegas and lose control like Henry wants me to.
No, you're going to not have control, because who knows who's going to win the game?
Oh yeah, no, well that's.
I'll tell
that's
you
fine.
What. I'll go with you boys, but I'm going to a show, because I actually really want to see Carrot Top.
I want to see Carrot Top, and I want to see Penn and Teller. We're going to do it all, guys.
Well, during March Madness, just to be cheeky, Berdella put four human skulls in the window of his shop. Guess what he labeled it?
I would assume the team names.
No.
The Final Four?
Yeah!
You got it, buddy. You know, and you know what's funny? How many times you see these fucking like cute jokes, or like, and where my family is from, and where my family lives in Florida, there is a chiropractor that does all these like funny sayings. On his thing, you know, like all was funny. It was kind of famous for it, and then he got busted for stealing money from his own company. Like for some reason, that's a thing that can happen, and it's always that. And someone who's always super funny ends up being like a massive secret criminal for some reason.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't trust a chiropractor who's punny.
Yeah, unbeknownst to everyone walking by the shop chuckling at that joke, the owner of Bob's Bizarre Bazaar had a 22-year-old named Christopher Bryson tied up in his bedroom back home.
And you know what the thing is? If you ask a owner of a curiosity shop if he's got a 22-year-old hustler tied up at home, he's legally required to tell you the truth.
I agree.
Now, unlike all the rest of Bob's victims, Christopher was a stranger. Berdella had picked him up at 10th and McGee, which was Kansas City's number one hotspot for gay male sex work. Now, most of the guys there knew Berdella's reputation, but the newlywed Bryson had a pretty strong itch for cocaine that day.
Jesus Christ.
He got into Bob's car, no questions asked.
This is why I'm really glad, like, my main obsession is burritos. You know what I mean? I'm so glad I'm not addicted to cocaine, because you listen to this guy's testimony, what he talks about in an interview after this. He's just been like, yeah, so I'm not gay or nothing. It's just that thing. Sometimes you need that rap. Sometimes you got to get that rock, and you got to do whatever it takes to get that rock. And the first thing, I look at Bob, and I was like, well, he isn't that gay looking. And all of a sudden, you can get into the car, and you know, and your lips are doing the talking for your nose. And you're like, it's like, holy God. It just like that the cocaine led to me to be inside of this hatchback, inside of a man just staring at me, licking his lips like I'm a bucket of chicken.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the weirdest place my addiction ever ran me was I went to a weird guy's house in Staten Island so I could get a copy of First Pressing of Raw Power, and no one knew I was there.
Okay. I don't know what the
this
hell
is
that
is.
Saying,
you definitely you could have been a victim. very quickly.
Absolutely. But he had an original pressing of the Velvet Underground and Nico. He had the banana sticker album.
You?
No, he just showed it to me. But he did give me the Raw Power.
What's Raw Power?
It's the Stooges' third album.
But did you purchase it or did he just give it to you?
He just gave it to me. I could tell there was nothing happened. There was an insinuation. There was definitely an insinuation.
But so I actually think you probably should have stroked it a little bit.
You didn't even touch his dick?
No, of course I didn't touch his dick.
No,
I'm not the type of person to trade sexual favors for a fucking record. Do you people think I
am?
Put
a halo on your head. What an angel. What an angel.
What a perfect angel.
Wow. Oh. 2020, the year of the saint.
What year was this?
2006, 2007.
Oh, you could have touched his dick for definite. I'm certain that 2006 Marcus might have thought about it.
No, not 2006 Marcus. No, I'm not going to trade sexual favors for records.
You're not changing. You're not trading for the record.
It's
a
tip.
You're just doing it. You're just having fun with it.
Well, he was an older man and not very attractive.
Okay, well, now we get to the truth. Poor guy. He's just trying to pick up a young scamp out here in the streets of Brooklyn. Next thing you know, he didn't even get his dick touched.
He was very nice, though.
I know this sweet independent record will get me a fly that finally understand me. Oh, I guess that ghoul had to leave like all the rest of them did.
Well, once they got back to Bob's house, that would be Bob and Bryson, they started walking up the stairs. Bob picked up a hidden iron pipe and bashed Bryson's skull. Bryson landed face first on the stairs, and while he was lying there, Bob stuck a needle into Bryson's neck, and the dude passed out. Mm. When he woke up, his arms and legs were tied to the bedposts, a washcloth was stuffed in his mouth, and a dog collar was around his neck.
Now, you notice this is way more aggressive than his previous victims. This is the closest he got, I would say, to a vaguely berserker mode where he's just going full on, like, I'm just going to surprise you with a pipe shot. It's very, very scary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was just at the beginning that he was very aggressive. I think he was trying to get a little bit of anger out from, his penis getting bitten off and all that. And besides the usual sodomy and the breaking of hands with Bob's iron bar, Bob also tried blinding Bryson by swabbing his eyes with ammonia-soaked cotton. Because if he's blind, Bob has more control. Mm-hmm. As far as the electrocution went, Bob clamped electrodes to Bryson's testicles and took pictures of the electrocution. And again, Bob told his victim that if he cooperated, he would be treated well. He'd be bought cigarettes, or he'd be given solid food, or, if he was really lucky, Bob would
be given a Stooges record?
No. Close. Bob would rent a video on his way home from work.
Hope you like Clue again.
Lucky for you. You ready? Press play.
Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living.
That movie
Lily
is
Tomlin
awesome.
Is a revelation.
She is.
Lily Tomlin is a revelation. Revelation. Lily Tomlin is a revelation in this stuff.
Yes, she is. Dolly, Lily, Jane Fonda.
But while Bob was telling him all this, he was showing Bryson post-mortem Polaroid pictures of the guys he'd already killed, telling him that these were men that were sex slaves that Bob had failed to, quote-unquote, collect. Bryson's only saving grace during his 3 days in Bob's captivity was that he wasn't even conscious for most of it, because Bob pretty well kept him knocked out. But even so, Bryson still got a daily shot of Drano to the neck to keep him from screaming.
God!
Now, it could be that Bob Berdella had gotten a little taste of domestic bliss with his last victim. Because even though Bob still did do awful fucking things to Bryson, he seemed to soften just a little bit. He once again tried settling into some semblance of a normal routine with Bryson. Even rented a double feature.
Which one?
Lost Boys and RoboCop.
Honestly, that's good, but RoboCop, when the guy gets his dick shot off,
I can't
that
believe
must have
that
been
you
like triggering.
Shoot somebody in the dick. Like, that's a funny thing. Like, that's a thing that should be in a movie.
Damn.
As such, Bryson became the only person to escape Bob Berdella. 3 days into his captivity, Bryson was able to convince Bob to tie his hands in front of him rather than above his head, because he said that was more comfortable. He said, I can't get no circulation in my arms. My hands are above my head. So Bob acquiesced and tied him in front. And as soon as Bob left the house, Bryson squirmed and wiggled until he finally got one hand loose. And once that first hand was loose, the rest was relatively simple, or at least as simple as it can be with two half-broken hands.
Damn.
Ugh.
Because Bob didn't break the hands completely. It was more like a, he wanted them half broken. It was a
Why?
Very strange thing. I don't know.
So they, it seems to be that he felt that it would be difficult for them to wiggle free.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something, I mean, this is all fucked up conjecture, but if you keep somebody in a constant amount of pain, you can make them very physically weak because your body's sort of dealing with the pain that you're in. You're in shock. I imagine it's several ways. It also is a way for them to not be able to like grab at your dick when you're trying to like do stuff with them, like grab at your face, do anything hard for you to punch, like do all that kind of shit. So
yeah,
it does work like that. I mean, I hate that I sounded like I read all this in a manual or I wrote a manual how to
right,
do these things.
Right.
Well, Bob had been giving Bryson a cigarette every day before Bob left for work. And on that particular day, Bryson was able to distract Bob just enough where Bob left behind a book of matches. Using those matches, Bryson was able to slowly burn down the four ropes tied around his legs. Mm. And once he was free, he opened a window in the upstairs bedroom where he was being held. He then tried to hang down from the windowsill so he could drop down, but before he could get his bearings, the windowsill broke and Bryson fell, breaking his foot. And even so, Bryson was able to hobble down the street, naked and wearing a dog collar, and eventually he was able to flag down a meter man from the water department, and the meter man very quickly called the cops.
Damn.
How scary is that moment when you're trying to burn these things? Because he said what happened is that Bob Berdella used to keep a super loud TV going in the living room, so you can't tell if he's back in the house. You have no clue where the hell he is. So he's hearing this stuff, and he burned the ropes, but then he was incredibly afraid of touching the bed frame because he'd been zapped so many times that he had kind of developed this sort of this thought process that he had electrocuted the bed frame. And so then he's super afraid of it. And again, and he had no clue where the window was going, but he knew that the window's the only way out, which is, he learned that from horror movies. And it's true. Even if you break your damn foot, get away from Michael. Just jump through the window.
You got to.
After that, it was only a matter of time. Although the case damn near fell into the same pattern as the police goof-em-up we saw halfway through Jeffrey Dahmer's Reign of Terror.
Uh-oh.
When Bryson's report about what Bob had done and said was passed on to Homicide, they assumed the whole thing was a, quote, homosexual lover's quarrel.
Oh, yeah, Jesus. That's totally normal. I mean, that's how, that's how lovers
always
quarrel,
like
absolutely.
Yeah. It was just like when the fucking Milwaukee police returned Conorak's synthosome foam to fucking Jeffrey Dahmer.
It's
the exact same thing. It's like, well, this is the wacky shit they get up to, and I don't want to deal with this, so just give him back.
Wacky.
Oh, yeah. But thankfully, since Bryson was completely coherent, they had no choice but to investigate further.
Ugh, although, I guess we have to look into this.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'll go put my short shorts on again. Oh, I also just shaved today. This is perfect undercover work for me.
You've been fired for 6 months.
Do you want a Stooges CD? Because I actually have an album here that's pretty cool.
Although the cops were highly disappointed that they were all going to miss the March Madness final between Kansas and Duke that year.
Aww.
It is so fucked up that that's their that was their whole being like, as soon as it became a real investigation, be like, I gotta miss the game, and then I gotta go to this place where there's this blood and cum everywhere. God damn it.
Now, Bob treated the officers with his normal haughty tone, telling them that he wouldn't say a word unless his lawyer was present. But thankfully, the house was fucking full of evidence. Mm-hmm. Besides all the torture implements and drugs, police pretty quickly found both the Polaroid photos under the mattress showing men both alive and dead, and all of Bob's notes. And with the notes, Bob had kept newspaper clippings concerning his victims' disappearances and kept them all in a folder labeled house guests.
Isn't that fun?
That is fun. These guys are so
You gotta
so
have
late.
Fun first. Or no one else can have fun. Uh-huh. You know what I mean?
Is it just pictures of Sinbad?
Yeah. It's amazing what Sinbad's relationship with that family does for the entire family. Mm-hmm. Every single one of them grow and learn,
yep,
because Sinbad's just so full of love and joy, and he's so footloose and fancy free. You just want to be like him.
But of course, that wasn't all the evidence the cops found. When they searched the basement, they saw dried blood that looked like it dripped down from the ceiling, and also saw a smudged footprint on the ceiling beam where Bob had hung a victim upside down.
Jeez.
They also found the chainsaw. Although it was overlooked at first...
How?
Yeah, exactly. How?
It's the chainsaw!
One of the officers eventually gave it a closer examination and found that it was clogged with dried blood, bits of human flesh, and pubic hair. Because remember, Bob had had to use the chainsaw a lot more on Larry Pearson.
Damn.
Yep.
And concerning disposal implements, they also found a circular saw, a black ceremonial dagger, 3 butcher knives, a hacksaw, and 14 saw blades. All had been used in the service of dismembering Bob's victims. And that was only a little bit of the nastiness that was in store for the cops who had to catalog Bob's belongings. The ones who spent the longest in the home developed what came to be known as the Burdella Cough. That's how fucking filthy this place was.
Damn.
They said it was like a little half hack that kind of just settled into your chest. And they had to rotate officers in and out because none of them could stand to spend more than like a few hours in there before they got the hack too.
Oh,
what
God.
Did they get? Did they like sound like they were at the World Trade Center? What's going on?
Well, it's like all those hoarder shows. Anytime the hoarders, anytime the 1-800 got junk people go into the hoarder house, they all wear the masks. Same shit. But the kicker for Bob Burdella came when the skull of Robert Sheldon was found in his closet, and the skull of Larry Pearson was soon after dug up from Bob Burdella's backyard after neighbors testified to Bob's frequent night gardening. After that, Kansas City went a little nuts.
Yeah?
Yeah.
With Kansas won?
No, Kansas, I believe, lost.
That was a Duke year, I think.
That was a Duke year.
Yeah, I think that was a Duke
inside
year.
Bob Burdella's house and in the Final Four.
See, Bob had been a local character down at the flea market, and he participated in quite a few potlucks, both there and in his own neighborhood.
Uh-oh.
Remember, Bob's famous for that homemade chili.
No, don't like this.
I like this because it ain't got no beans in it. What's this? This is a bean? No, actually, that's a kidney bean.
I'm going to punch you in the face.
Then pretty soon, rumors started circulating that anyone who'd eaten one of Bob's meals had also probably eaten one of Bob's victims. There's
no
evidence. There's no proof that Bob put meat in, put human meat.
Did he say that he did at all?
He said he did not. He said he didn't.
Okay.
He said he absolutely did not.
Yeah, that's one of those things about Bob, right? I don't like to necessarily take him for his word, but you do watch his interview with him, and he does admit to many things. But a lot of stuff, he's like, when they ask him about the cannibalism, he's like, that is disgusting. I can't believe that you'd say that about me, because number one, that was a moment of faith between us and the other fellow sellers at the flea markets, that we did a potluck.
And everybody trusted each other to bring in something high quality, one, and also two, locally sourced. And that's what I did. And yes, and I don't even mean that. Like, oh, you disgusting people.
So this offended him, the idea.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Then, to capitalize on the media sensation, a local classic rock radio DJ named Skid Rody,
love it,
wrote and produced a parody song. Sung to the tune of Donovan's Mellow Yellow, Skid Rody rewrote the song with the following lyrics. I'm just mad about torture. The police are mad about me. Hitchhikers wearing dog collars. I give them jolts of electricity.
They call me Bobberdella. They call me Bobberdella. They call me Bobberdella.
Don't stick that in.
And that is the predecessors of our entire show.
Yeah, I mean, it was a golden age for radio. When they could just, you could do whatever you wanted back then.
And Bob was extremely upset by all of this.
Oh, he didn't like it.
He hated
no.
it.
Oh.
Here's Bob himself talking about how incensed he was about a contest run by Skid's radio station, 101 The Fox, Kansas City's classic rock station.
Oh.
I had also been told when I first came into jail that the Fox radio station had run a promo giving prizes to their listeners if they showed up at the station in a dog collar and with a leash on. The people here in the institution, the correctional officers, the caseworker, even the psychiatrist, were, I think, surprised to find out that that upset me.
And it did upset you?
Very much so.
If we could only, we need to get, he's the Tipper Gore of serial killers. He is just like, we need a parental advisory on these, on the Fox shows, and I don't like what they're saying about anyone. What's going to happen?
His whole thing is, it's like, because after this, he goes on to a spiel about how it's like, it's insensitive to the victims. It's insensitive to everybody involved, to, I mean, it's just to the, even the police officers, their wonderful work. What they did, when they found the way they process it, was flawless, incredible. Everybody was incredible, fun. The food's been great. The coffee's a little, I could use a little kind of an Ethiopian bean, but.
Hey, Bob, Skid Rody over here. Thanks so much for coming on the show. Do you think it was insensitive to the victims when you put a carrot up their ass? Do we have the carrot sound effect?
Again, Kissel, do not make fun of this. This is the inspiration for our entire show.
Oh, and I checked. Skid Rody's still on the air.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Hell, he's, yeah, Drive Time on the Fox 101.1. It's 2 for Tuesdays. Who's ready to get the lead out? This is Skid Rody, Kansas City's only classic rock.
If we would get the lead out of paint in schools the way that they get the lead out every single day on radio, our children would be a lot healthier.
But eventually, Bobberdella gave in to the inevitable, pled guilty to first-degree murder, and received a life sentence. Mm. But within about a year, maybe a little more, Bobberdella was dead from a heart attack at the age of 43 because the prison guards had allegedly withheld his heart medication. Yeah. Allegedly.
It does seem that they didn't take his cries of I have chest pains very seriously.
No.
But I don't know why, though.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. No. It's weird. I just don't care.
No, not really.
Well, yeah, it is weird that I just don't care that he's fucking dead. I'm glad he's fucking dead.
I actually feel like he got off way easy.
He did.
He should have had 40. Although, maybe because of his intense love of disgusting things, he may have liked prison.
He was fine with it. He was okay.
It's probably cleaner than his damn house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He was okay with it. I'm not super comfortable with COs taking life in their own hands, though.
No, I'm not.
No,
either.
I know. I know.
Well, today, Bob Berdella's former home is an empty lot. Following the sale of his estate, the house was bulldozed, and the neighbors on either side were given half the lot each.
Thank you for giving me this.
Good.
I checked it out on Google Street View. One of them built a fucking garage on top of their half.
That's a good spot.
Honestly,
that's where you want it.
I don't think I would take it. I
would at least it's the garage. You're not going to put the nursery on that side.
God.
Well, the estate itself, all of Bob's shit. Like, his house was full of shit, full of all these curiosities, you know, Bob's Bazaar and all that. It was all bought by an eccentric local millionaire named Delbert Dunmire.
Why are they always named like really bad comic strip characters?
Cost about $60,000.
Okay.
Yeah. Damn.
But since Delbert died in 2016 and his children are currently fighting over his estate, we may never see Bob's Bazaar ever again.
Wow.
And that's Bob Burdella.
Bob Burdella. What an insane story.
Woof.
Gosh.
Absolutely disgusting.
It really is. I'm never going to think of vegetables the same way ever again.
Yeah.
I will say, especially after the first episode, you know what really friggin' like messed me up this year was the Mengele episodes. Mengele!
Yeah.
Those things really fuck with my standards of what is the most fucked up thing you can do.
Yeah.
And so then you get lost and you have to get a recheck after, like, especially after last episode. And then I was like, oh, yeah, wow, this is the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
It was pretty bad.
It was very bad. All right, everyone. Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you all. We all hope you had a wonderful holiday. We hope your new year has been off to a good start thus far.
Let's hope so.
And we are super excited to see you all in April. Make sure you get those tickets. And our book tour, we're just thrilled to go and see y'all again.
Go to lastpodcastontheleft.com to see all of the tour dates. We're doing 19 cities in 30 days in April. And most likely, if you live in America, we're going to be coming to a city at the very least near you.
Near you, yes.
Yeah, dude, come and see our bullshit.
It's going to be a great fucking show. Brand new show. It's going to be true crime specific.
True crime.
Yes, true crime. We're going to be doing a lot of serial killer shit. We're going to be hawking the book. We can't wait to strut and fret upon stage. Come and join us. We're going to have so much fun. Honestly, in New York, it's such a big deal for us to be performing at the Beacon Theater. I can't believe that we're there. Please come out and support us.
As soon as that was announced, I got like a bunch of texts from people being like, congratulations. I didn't quite realize.
Oh, you didn't realize that this is a huge fucking deal?
I knew. No, honestly, I refuse to realize things are big deals because then when everything falls apart, it'll be much more disappointing.
Right.
It's a safety mechanism that I have in my head.
I understand.
No, it helps.
We're very, very excited.
It's going to be fucking amazing. It's a dream come true.
Absolutely. Let's see here. So keep on supporting all the shows on LPN. What else do we got? What else do we want to tell these wonderful listeners of ours?
Next week we're gonna have a relaxed fit episode, and I think you're gonna enjoy it. It's gonna be fun, special time. Mm-hmm. Check out we got Whizbrew and Page Seven are having live shows very soon. Next week we got Chicago January 9th. We got Pontiac, Michigan January 10th, and we got Milwaukee January 11th. Come and fucking check them out. If you're in the Midwest, their show is really good.
It's super fun. Go out and support.
Support their fucking asses. It's great. And also, support me. If you're in Atlanta, I'll be doing Dad's Garage January 10th and 11th, doing improv, make them ups.
Make sure to bring Henry's homemade chili when you go to Dad's Garage. go see Jackie Zabrowski out there. She is going to be a wonderful performer, Natalie Jean, Holden McNeely, and Jake Young. They will have a great show for you.
It'll be great. Go out and check it out.
Absolutely. All right, everyone. We are excited for the new year. We're excited to be with you. Bigger and better things hopefully happening for all of us in the future.
Let's hope so.
Hail yourselves, everyone!
Hail Satan!
Again!
Magustalations.
Hail me. If you're well.
Hey, and again, you know, it's 2020, it's a new year. Let the boy go.
Let the boy go.
Let everyone go. Let everyone go.
Anyone.
Let the boy go.
If you have a bunny. Open your door and let your dog out.
Let the bunny go.
Well, it depends, because sometimes bunnies like carrots.
Yeah.
Oh, no, now I can't even think about that.
Dang it.
It's hard to get a carrot in the wild, but now our carrots are ruined, cucumbers are gone. I'm supposed to be losing weight this year, and now I can't even think of vegetables.
Oh, you'll be fine.
All right.
You'll love it.
This is a fun excuse for you now.
No, it's
you
not.
Watch a video.
No, I mean,
you
watch honestly, a video. Honestly, it would have been good if it was a pepperoni, though, because then I'd be like, I'm not going to eat that.
No, man, you flip it now, and you go watch a couple of videos of women putting things up in their vaginas, and you're going to want to eat what they go up there.
You'll be great.
Okay.
Goodbye.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors. You can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.